8. Afran System, Afran 4. Afran 4 was a heavily forested world whose green landmasses stood out in stark contrast from her blue seas. She was a warm world, lacking polar ice, with no moons to contribute tides, and she was a comparatively poor world, whose people were noted chiefly for mastery in woodworking, whose artistic inlays were prized by collectors. All this Han knew from a brief look at the star map records in the Falcon's computer. The records suggested that Afran would never survive even a weak Yuuzhan Vong attack. Considering how close she was to the Yuuzhan Vong zone of control, not far from Bilbringi, only her relative unimportance had kept her from being conquered by the enemy. Han glanced at his wife. She looked very different than usual. Her hair was long, black, and straight. Her eyebrows broader and darker to match. And she wore garments that Senator Leia Organa Solo would never have been caught dead in. They started with a bodysuit that was black and glossy. Though synthetic, it creaked like hide when she moved. Her boots, low-slung blaster holster, and gloves were of a similar material, but matte rather than glossy. In the spirit of the character she was to portray, she had her feet up, crossed at the ankle, on the co-pilot control board before her. She fixed Han with a forbidding stare. "What are you looking at, ground pounder?" Han shook his head. "If your daughter could see you now—" Leia broke character for a moment and grinned. "I'll make sure R2 gets a holo for her. He'll have to get you, too." Han nodded. "I am magnificent." He'd spent enough time in front of the mirror both to make sure that his disguise was adequate and to be certain that his costume provided sufficient dash and drama. He wore a close-trimmed beard. His real hair and his false facial hair were a matching, distinguished shade of silver gray. But he was not trying for the look of an elder statesman. His uniform was a dark gray, two shades more somber than the old Imperial Navy uniform, and thick with accoutrements. A brand-new pistol on his hip, twin vibroblades on the other hip, a brace of alternating vibroblades and small backup blasters across his chest. The metal gauntlet on his left hand looked like a commercial robotic replacement and contained enough circuitry to read as a prosthetic to most scanners. The contact lens on his left eye made the eyeball silver reflective, the false puckering scar reaching upward and downward from the eye, suggested the violence that had caused the mechanical replacement to be installed. C-3PO in the passenger seat behind the pilot's chair spoke up. "So that I do not jeopardize your mission through misstatement or omission, Princess, may I ask why the deception?" "Afran is something of an unknown quantity," Leia said. "The smugglers we're going to meet and try to persuade to act as our local resistance organizers say that there have been a lot of surreptitious comings and goings with government envoy ships. What does that suggest to you?"
"That matter is rather outside my fields of expertise," the droid replied. "But it would seem to me that the planetary government does not need to be surreptitious when sending representatives to the New Republic. That would suggest that they are sending their envoys to someone they wish the New Republic to know nothing about."
Leia nodded. "Very good. To whom?"
"Since the most far-reaching government outside the New Republic is that of the Yuuzhan Vong, simple statistics give the highest probability of it being them."
"Correct. Or perhaps the Peace Brigade, acting as intermediaries for the Yuuzhan Vong."
"Oh, I hope not, Princess. The Peace Brigade are, well, very unpleasant, very difficult."
This was something of an understatement. The Peace Brigade was a loose alliance of mercenaries who cooperated with the Yuuzhan Vong. Believing the Yuuzhan Vong claim that a galaxy without the Jedi would be a galaxy at peace, or just to earn profits, they had hunted the Jedi, capturing some, and turning them over to the enemy. Definitely unpleasant, except to those who shared their ability to cast blame for the current war on anyone but the aggressors. They were widely regarded as traitors to the New Republic. Han said, "And if they're talking to the Vong, the Solos can't be recognized here." Leia nodded.
If the Yuuzhan Vong learn that the Solos are here, they come to get us. Even if we use false names, if a Corellian YT-1300 freighter lands with a dashing, vainglorious man at the controls, it doesn't matter what name he uses, people are going to think Han Solo. Han shot her an offended look. Vainglorious? Vainglorious, Leia affirmed. Vain plus glorious. Go ahead, deny it. Well, I can't, really.
Instead of being directed to a berth on the planetary capital's commercial district, the Falcon followed her homing beacon to a government spaceport district some distance away from the capital. The spaceport was an enormous thing, kilometers long, with landing bays and warehousing domes on spars that extended like the arms of some sort of mutant sea creature from a central hub. As they followed the beacon in, Han spent a lot of time at the comm board, arguing first with one minor official, then another. Finally, just before final approach, he leaned back and sighed. "We can't land in the commercial zone," he said. Leia frowned. "Why not?" "All cargo has to be offloaded and inventoried here. New regulations. Once it's all offloaded, we can decide where it's to be taken by their cargo haulers. Back on the ship for transport elsewhere, or into one of the warehouses up here for evaluation by buyers. The thing is, no matter where it's loaded, it costs money to move it, and it costs more to put it back on the ship than to warehouse it." Leia nodded, a world-weary smile on her lips. "Which is an inducement to keep the cargo up here so that a more limited range of buyers can look at it, which helps keep prices and bribes where they want them." "And people called me dishonest," Han muttered. "On the other hand, we don't have to wait around for them to complete their inventory. We can take a commercial land speeder into their capital. That'll give them lots more time to steal expensive bits and pieces from our cargo, which is really what it's for anyway." A pair of Afran men standing in front of a refueling station watched the duo emerge from the landing bay that now housed the Corellian YT-1300 freighter.
"I see a man and a woman I don't recognize," said the first. He was a man of middle height, his hair, beard, and mustache graying. With his reserved, courteous manner and his colorful, comparatively expensive clothing, he looked like a fit merchant, but the hardness of his eyes, when he was not trying to cause someone to like or trust him, suggested that he was not that peaceable a man. And while the man and the woman could be the Solos, they could also be billions of other people.
"I didn't say they were the Solos," the second man said. His jumpsuit matched the lavender with black pinstripes decor of the front of the refueling station. He was as lean and tough-looking as the banded artificial muscles found in cybernetic limbs. "I said that it was the Millennium Falcon. I don't care where they slap paint on her or how many new antennas they mount on her. I know the look of her. I know the sound of her creaks when she comes in for a landing."
Well, until we're sure, we play it safe."
"There's less money in playing it safe."
"There's longer to live and spend that money in playing it safe."
"You're the boss."
The bearded man eyed his companion. In his experience, "you're the boss" always meant, "I'll shut up for now, then put a vibroblade in your back when the profit is highest." He mentally crossed his companion off his useful list and moved him to expendable.
"I'll get things started," he said. "Thanks for the tip."
"Anytime."
The bearded man moved off toward his personal transport, a late-model land speeder paid for by information he'd furnished to the Peace Brigade. If these were the Solos, he might be able to afford a personal spacecraft now, even factoring in the sum his companion's elimination would cost. On the balcony of their rented quarters, Leia sat, her ankles crossed on the railing before her, and entered notes. Things were going well, mostly. The Talon Card organization had already led her to a pair of retired, semi-retired, smugglers who were trusted by Card and whose enthusiasm for hunkering down in anticipation of the Yuuzhan Vong invasion matched hers. With their experience, they could find their own bases of operations,
could even help with the acquisition of some vehicles and other equipment. What Han and Leia had to do now was help them set up a communication system, a combination holocom and comlink that could transmit and receive the short, hard-to-track data packets that were the essence of Resistance communications. But Leia set her notes aside for a moment, distracted by the view. Below the balcony, a small lake stretched into the distance. Its far shore was at the base of a low line of hills, and Afran, the planet's sun, was now setting beyond them. It was a red-gold orb, distorted by distance and atmosphere. The hills cast shadows over the distant part of the lake, while sunbeams illuminated the nearer portions, turning the water from green-blue to a brilliant gold. It was only a sunset. She'd seen lovely sunsets all over the galaxy, but it had been some time since she'd paid attention to one, appreciated one. This sunset meant nothing in the face of Yuuzhan Vong invasions, the death of Anakin, the disappearance of Jason, her long separations from the rest of her family. But just for this moment, those sacrifices didn't dig pain into her, and she could appreciate what she was seeing, its simple beauty. "Bottle that and sell it, and we could make a fortune." Leia started. She looked up to where Han stood behind her. The energy field that kept the cooler air inside their quarters also muffled sound, so it hadn't been too difficult for him to sneak up on her. He stared into the distance, watching the golden rays retreating as the sun continued its descent. And for once there was no self-deprecating humor, no expression of suspicion or cynicism on his face, just contemplation. Leia reached up to take his hand. He settled into the chair next to hers. "How are your errands?" she asked. "Pretty good. The inventory's about half done, and the locals haven't found any irregularities." His last words were private code, agreed upon before the Falcon had set out on this series of missions. Irregularities meant the smuggling compartments and the shielded escape pod. Those secrets remained intact. "And I was able to make some purchases. Cabinets. I need to arrange for their delivery." So he'd been able to find the comm gear he needed, but delivery to wait until the new Resistance leaders locally had a place for it. "You?" "Oh, I may have made some new friends." "That's good. You know what?"
"What?"
"I don't want to talk about work any more today."
"Me either."
Borlias. Tam and Woolum sat in the pilot seats of Woolum's shuttle. Once a military blast boat, it had been stolen from the Empire early in Woolum's career and gradually converted to a lightly armed mobile office. Now it sat in the kill zone in front of the biotics building, one of the few vehicles internally lit at this nighttime hour. In the absence of true broadcaster facilities, Woolum did have a less comprehensive set of tools built into the ship's computer. And now he and Tam looked over their last couple of days' recordings, annotating them, choosing which to use and which to discard in Woolum's next historical documentary. "Here's one." Woolum paused the image and then tapped the figure of one mechanic working energetically on an X-wing engine. "A mechanic," Tam said. "A female mechanic." Woolum dialed the image so that the woman expanded to fill the screen. "Corellian, unmarried. Good-looking. I spoke with her for a few minutes while you were showing Tark the zoom functions."
"Ah, I see. We now take a break from work so you can once again try to set me up with a woman."
"That's correct."
"And I should seek her out because she's good-looking. Not that she isn't, but am I that shallow?"
"At your age, you should be."
Tam sighed and took the recording off pause. It continued on, focusing for a few more moments on that X-wing and its crew, before blanking. A moment later, the image of the biotics building's main lobby snapped into focus.
"More important, now's not the time," Tam said. "I have a few things to get through first, such as my reputation as a traitor."
"A reputation that exists only in your own mind."
and the fact that all my savings were on Coruscant, the fact that all my possessions fit in a bag that I have no trouble lifting. So seek out a woman who isn't as shallow as I wish you were. What's this? The image on the screen became jerky, blurring across a sea of waists and belt buckles. Then it rose, and Woolham's face appeared on the screen, saturated with light, recorded from about waist height. The recorded Woolham grimaced and tried to turn his face out of the glare. Oh, that's young Tark's recording. That's right, our second tour of the building. I think he was experimenting with the notion of using the Holocan glow rod as a weapon. Tam snorted, then became serious again. Woolham, he doesn't belong here.
True.
And the Solos, well, I don't have any criticism of them. They have their duties. But they're not exactly around here much. They're just momentary reassurances for him. Yes, they've accepted responsibility for him, despite their inability to be available to him at all times, because he needs someone, and no one else is that someone.
Pretty much the way you accepted responsibility for me 10 years ago.
Woolham shook his head. Not quite. You were 16, more or less an adult.
Just like now.
Woolham smiled. Tam, listen, if you have a feeling, it's that you don't seize the initiative, don't grasp the opportunities that are before you, such as going out and spending the occasional rowdy evening with people your own age. There are plenty here, including that mechanic. Such as finding out for yourself that your worries about your reputation as a traitor are unfounded. But that feeling is not too great a sin. Its consequences eat at you, but don't hurt anyone except you. You don't hurt other people. You do a necessary job quietly and well. And when a hard task moves into your path, such as shaking off the domination of the Yuuzhan Vong, you accomplish that task.
Eventually.
I'm trying to say, as your friend rather than as your employer, that I'm proud of you. And I wish you were proud of yourself.
Tam met Woolham's eyes, then looked away, concentrating on the screen again, rather than let Woolham see tears trying to form.
Woolham, that boy needs somebody. When it comes time to shove off Borlius, I want to take him along with me. With us, if you'll have him along.
See there? Another task accepted. A gigantic one, compared to shaking off Yuuzhan Vong brainwashing. Accepting responsibility for a whole entire child.
But have you asked him? Have you talked to the Solos?
No, I will. And if any of them say no, then it's no. But I think Tark deserves the offer.
I think you're right. And, of course, I'd be happy for him to come along. If he can learn to stop spinning, he could be a useful backup holocam operator.
Tam grinned. On the screen, Tark's low point of view recording continued, catching both Tam and Woolham as they marched down one of the biotics building's basement hallways. Something on a wall over a doorway flashed with reflective light just for a moment, then disappeared as the holocam view progressed. Tam sat upright.
Hold it.
He paused the recording, then reversed it until that doorframe came into view again.
What is it?
I'm not sure.
He wasn't sure, but if it was what he thought it was bad news.
He scrolled the screen view back and forth across that 1 second of recording. One moment the wall above the doorframe was blank, then there was that reflection, then it was blank again.
Are you sure now?
Let's go look. It was a low-security hallway, though there were higher-security doors on it. They were protected by keypads and alarms, and around the corner from the portion of the hallway where they stood, doors providing access to the Twin Sun Squadron's special turbolift were guarded by security personnel. But here there were two doors immediately across from one another. The one on the left had a keypad access and was marked Environment. The one on the right led to a well-packed utility closet.
Tam reached up over that doorway and ran his finger along the wall.
After a few centimeters of paint, his fingertip encountered a smoother substance, though no change in the wall texture was visible to him.
The smoothness ran for perhaps 10 centimeters, then turned to paint texture again.
"I saw that,"
Wollum said.
"What was it?"
"A Yuuzhan Vong toy. When they had control of me, I put one up on the wall outside Annie Kui's laboratory. Watch this." Tam stroked the thing along its left edge, a combination he'd been taught during his brief, painful, life-changing stay among the Yuuzhan Vong. Vibrant colors suddenly appeared on the patch of material. They showed the keypad on the door opposite, showed hands moving across the keys, tapping in an access code.
Tam looked at Wollum. His expression was unhappy. He pulled a comlink out from a pocket.
"Tam Elgren to Comm-Main Control. Put me through to the intelligence office."
"This is Comm-Main. Say again your name and authority."
"This is Tam Elgren. I'm one of the civilians on base."
"Oh, right. You're that civilian. Who did you want again?"
"The intelligence office."
"The intelligence office isn't staffed every hour of the day, and you aren't authorized to demand the attention of the head of the department. I'm amazed you're authorized to remain on Borlios."
Tam covered over the microphone portion with his palm. He offered Wollum a cynical smile. "So my reputation is all in my imagination, huh?"
"Give me that."
Tam handed the comlink over. "Hello, this is Wollum, sir. I, too, want to speak to the Director of Intelligence or the Director of Security, and I mean immediately." Tam moved to the keypad and tapped at several of its keys. There was an audible click from the lock, and the door slid up and open. Beyond were floor-to-ceiling banks of mechanical and electronic equipment and a narrow, worker-sized gap between them.
"No, you're just Tam Elgren again, changing his voice, and if you continue to broadcast on this frequency, I'm going to have you dragged through the kill zone behind a landspeeder."
"State your name and rank."
"I'm Warrant Officer Erman Nock, Security."
"Warrant Officer Erman Nock, Security, are you widely considered to be an idiot?"
"What?"
"Because in less than a day I can guarantee that you will be, by your fellow security officers, by your superiors, by your family and your pets, by the officers who court-martial you, and the taint will stay with you throughout your life, because I am a brilliant historian and commentator, and you are at best a mediocre desk pilot. This will happen despite your best efforts, unless you hand me over to one of the officers I asked for right now."
Tam gave Wollum a thumbs up of approval. He took a step into the niche. Then he backed out again and bent over, studying the floor of the electronics access closet.
Hold on.
Tam reached down to the seam where the metal floor of the closet met the duracrete floor of the hallway. He lifted, and the floor came up, revealing a hole in the duracrete beneath. The hole was smooth-edged but irregular, lacking the mathematically precise curve of something cut by machinery. A noise floated up out of the hole. It seemed to come from a great distance, but it was recognizable. A wail of despair, of pain. Tam sat down at its edge, dangling his legs into the hole.
"I'm going down."
"No, you're not."
"I'm seizing the initiative, Wollum."
"No, you're waiting for an officer to come on the comlink."
Tam pushed the portion of metal flooring over until it leaned against a panel of machinery and would not fall across the hole. Then he slid down into the hole.
"Tam, blast it, don't do what I say. Do what I mean."